But it is fine. It's over, right?
We were thinking about having seminars for for dads and moms out there of how to tell your kids that they're trading Ja.
How to tell your kids that Ja has been traded. It's going to be this is how we're going to make a lot of money doing this. I think that's not going to be fair on the radio. We're going to have to start charge for this.
Listen, this is a PSA.
Look, we want to help out the community.
We're just building a brand.
Well, yeah, we're trying to keep the morale up.
Listen, man, this whole situation right here is why I can't have a professional team that I'm a fan of. I love professional sports. I love the NFL. I love the NBA. But, man, getting attached to a player the caliber of Ja Morant and then looking around and one day that guy is locked out. I mean, who got locked out? Steve McNair got locked out of the Tigers facility. My player was Cordell Stewart. When the Steelers let Cordell Stewart go, I was like, F it, to hell with it. All this is done. Right. I'll never cheer for another franchise again. I only rock with the players and the product on the field. Because it hurts. It does. As a kid,
but
I remember being
now you're picking a sport where you don't even – now you're picking a sport, though. Like, let's say you're Wolverines. You got no idea if anyone's going to be on your team next year.
Right. A portal. You'd rather Ja jump into a portal.
At least there are contracts.
But we know that. We know that going into college. College, even before NIL and before the transfer portal stuff, you knew you had a limited time with this dude. You know, at best, if this dude came in or this dude that came in and was a remarkable talent, you had 4 years max with him. You worked your way through that. You had 5 years if they redshirted. You accepted that. You know, hey, I got 5 years with this person, and then they'll be gone. I got 4 years with this person, and then they'll be gone. Oh my gosh, that one's really, really good. I'm only gonna see him for like 3 years, and then he'll be gone. I think because of that, we sort of accepted more in college. At least for me, it's easier for me to deal with the pain of players leaving in the transfer portal and going off to graduate. And the pros, man, you think that dude's going to be there and forever. I don't know why, but Father Time is undefeated, but we think those dudes are going to be on your team forever. And around, even if that's the case, right, take Dallas Mavericks and Dirk Nowitzki, for example. Even around that those last 2 or 3 years, are like, ooh, can we go ahead and get rid of him? We got to get good. I'm tired of losing these games for Dirk. And so it's hard, man. It's hard being a fan sometimes.
All right, my man, we appreciate you.
I appreciate y'all.
That is CJ Hurt, Grind City Media personality. You can see him every weekday on the Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the list. Also, coming up in about 30 minutes or so, we will have Chris Harrington. Chris has even offered up a song for his intro. So we'll continue the Jeff Calkins approach of having a song that Chris will give us during his appearance. And then coming up next hour, hour number three, we'll be hearing from you. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Chris Harrington is going to join the program. He's even sent us a song for his introduction, so we'll keep that tradition rolling from the Jeff Calkins Show. He's going to join us on Mondays on the program. We'll, of course, talk to him about the Ja Morant situation and more. But before we do any of that, let's get into the list. Tiger basketball. All right, so the Tigers are undefeated in conference play no more yesterday.
I love the way you word. That's like when somebody is getting voted out on a reality show or not getting voted out, and they're saying,
you are the weakest thing. Goodbye.
But they like say it like it's teasing, like, oh, they're undefeated. Oh, they're not. No,
not
they're
anymore.
Not anymore.
Once
they're
upon a time.
Not anymore.
No longer 500 either. Yes. So the Tigers fall at Florida Atlantic 89-78. But there were some developments in the game. Essentially, Penny played 9 guys and kind of stuck with it. The issues were a little different defensively than we have been seeing. One of the big issues for the Tigers has been they've not defended the 3 very well. Well, this game was they got killed on the inside. They were giving up a bunch of layups. They gave a lot of fast break points. It was a lot of the interior, and then they got out-rebounded significantly on the boards. I think it ended up being, let's see, total rebounds was 46-29. And then also on second chance points, the Owls get 19 with the Tigers just getting 8.
It's tough, Jeffrey. When the Tigers lose, and I'm talking to my dad about it, and I'm trying to be like, well, he's like, who do the Tigers play today? And like, I'm struggling. Like, I was like, is it Florida International that they play or Florida Atlantic?
FIU's CUSA. Like this, yeah. No.
Yeah, so this is, yeah.
FAU.
I knew it was Boca Raton, but I was trying to find, was it FIU or Florida Atlantic, Florida International? Who was, like,
This is the Owls back to back.
Yeah.
The Tigers get
the Rice. They had Rice and now.
It's the Owl trio.
There's a trio?
Rice.
Temple, wasn't it?
Rice.
Yeah, Temple. Yeah.
Rice last week. FAU on Sunday. And then on Wednesday, they get Temple. So that's a triple dipper of Owls.
Your conference should not have that many Owls unless, like, you're in the Hogwarts conference or something. Like, come on now.
And I don't even know if that. First off, I mean, it's a great nickname. I mean, obviously.
Owl? I guess.
Look who you're talking to.
I went to MUS.
I know. He's got. Went to MUS. You were the
voice of the.
Once an owl, always an owl. Yes, of course. Voice of the football Owls.
All right, so yeah.
I've not been asked to do basketball.
Could Memphis beat MUS is the question, Jeffrey, if they were the next Owl on the schedule. They could.
Right now, yes.
Great.
Yeah, I feel confident in that. I don't know. This is the other somewhat encouraging aspect of yesterday was.
Oh, let's hear the encouraging stuff, because I'm going to get into the non-encouraging stuff, because I read John Martin's column. Remember the guy who used to talk at this time? He's now on from 9 to noon.
Aaron Bradshaw was pretty good yesterday.
Pretty good. How did he do?
Something that you needed to see.
Sure.
Is in conference play. All right, he had a tough start to the season, but in conference play, when he's going to be able to out-athlete these guys, can he be a dominating force? And at times he was. He had 21. He was 3 of 3 from 3. Didn't expect to see that. But he was 9 of 15 from the floor. Like, overall, he was closer to what you thought you were getting. I don't know if you're necessarily 100% there. And it's also, I think, one of the other issues with Aaron Bradshaw is like, all right, now go do it again on Wednesday. Like, start stacking him up.
I I'm not going to come on here and say that, you know, yes, I think we just kind of acknowledge this is not going to be a great season. The team may not make the tournament this year. I mean, last year they beat Florida Atlantic by 30 points, right?
And not on the road, I don't think.
But it's a hard place to play.
Listen, it's a tough place to play. I will say also, if you're going to lose your first conference game, losing it at noon on Wild Card NFL Sunday,
that's
the right spot to be.
It's like the Friday news dump. It's
correct.
Like
that is a news dump of news dumps.
Right. They were down by as much as like 17 points, I believe.
Fought back.
Florida Atlantic. Oh, sure. So that's the positive. Oh, this is great. We have. I love your positivity here.
Let's see. Largest lead was 17. Yes, correct.
It just does not appear. And we've been watching the Tigers play much better opponents. And now here they go up against Florida Atlantic and lose. But
you're right. They beat them by 28 on the road.
Yeah, on the road. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, that's.
Beat about 28 on the road and then 19 at home.
That goes back to last year was very successful, and I keep going back to that when I talk about Penny. I was impressed with what he did last year, and college sports is in an environment that changes by court decisions and all types of stuff all the time.
Sometimes even just injunctions, not even like court rulings.
And there's no better coach, no other coach out there that would love the University of Memphis more than Penny Hardaway, and that deserves a chance to, if he wants to, as long as he wants to do it, keep doing it. So I'm not going to get into the Penny Hardaway. Maybe it's time for a change moment like that. Come on now. I don't think that's what it is. Like, he had a great year last year. I mean, if I was a Steelers fan, people were telling me Tomlin needs to go, I'd be like, are you out of your mind? And I'm saying the same Penny for different reasons with Penny. It's like he had a great year just last year. I believe your coach had a good year the year before. You're focused on the wrong thing after one bad year. And he's having a bad year, and he's got to make some changes. But the fact that I believe when I referenced John Martin's column, because I was interested by the point that the worst 15-game start for the Tigers in 25 years, it goes back to the first year of John Calipari, 2000 to 2001. So we're talking, we're going way back. That's 2 decades and a half ago that they've had this bad of a start. And part of the reason is because they have such a great schedule to begin.
I'd like to see how the strength of schedule factored.
Because the keynote is the first 15 games, right? So back then, Cal was playing Louisville and Cincinnati in conference play.
I mean,
started in January. The big non-conference were not that big, though.
They were not the volume.
So yeah, it's not apples to apples, but it is the fact is it's the worst start. And if you're a Tiger fan, you just kind of come to the realization this is not going to be that great of a year. If the Tigers make the tournament, that's great. So you can have them penciled in as an upset in your bracket if you want, and tune in on Thursday or Friday and cheer them on. And and hope for an upset. But I mean, that's your best case scenario. But there's a realistic scenario, especially after this game the other day, because the Tigers are playing. Yes, the conference tournament is set up for the Tigers to be successful, but they have to be somewhat good in conference play, right, to get the right seed.
Oh, I mean, you've got to finish first or second.
And they're still going to have to win those games on the road. They're not going to be playing FedEx Forum, these conference games, which I still think that's what explain to me, Jeffrey, why are these conference games not being played at FedEx Forum?
Well,
the conference tournament,
you had to bid for men's and women's, and they only bid on the men's.
Yeah.
They wanted the conference likes doing the
everybody in the same place.
Correct. I think for travel reasons. I think that's a huge part of it. And Birmingham was willing to bid on men's and women's. Also, they asked for the bids like late enough in the process, like it was like it wasn't as if FedEx Forum was like planning on bidding on this. You know what I mean? Like, so it was like late, and then,
right.
And then when you're like, well, can you host both tournaments? They probably had some concert, you know what I mean? Like,
but then there's also the Grizzlies are happening. It's going to be it's tricky to do that. So
that the best answer is they were unwilling to bid on both the men's and the women's brackets.
Right. Well,
I don't know. Like, this is kind of one of those other things where it's an unsatisfying watch, because if you're after every game, you're going, well, what does this mean?
Well, if you're watching every game, God bless you. go Tigers.
I mean, but this is kind of where I am with this team, where it's like there are a few things that are falling into place that you need to see, but I'm also not going to sit here and act like that, this is really a good basketball team that's just had tough luck.
What you're telling me, what I'm hearing from you, because I was watching the NFL when I was watching sports yesterday. It was awesome wild card weekend. And like, I'm hyped.
Presented
now.
By Verizon.
Yeah, there you go. But I don't even know what channel I could have found the Tiger game on yesterday anyway.
The Deuce.
Was it on the Deuce?
The
Deuce.
Wow.
Ooh, that's a high profile spot there.
We had Coach K's son-in-law, Chris Spatola. I think he's the son-in-law. I think Chris is married to one of Coach K's daughters.
You found some positives in yesterday's game.
But I'm also not. I'm not acting like I don't want anyone to sit there and go, these are moral victories. These are more of like, okay, if you start to get more of this,
then they could do what they need to do,
correct,
which is win the conference tournament,
correct,
so they can make the.
Correct.
You see, like, okay, there's potential here. They could get it all together, win the conference tournament, and make it to the
exactly.
to the big dance at the end of the year. That's the goal. It's such a small
correct.
Bar expectation, because when you see the final score of this game, it looks, maybe they can't do that. But you're
and
saying
at times,
there was moments,
the watch was like that too.
But there's parts of the game that you said, okay, well, maybe they can. It's just today wasn't the day. Good thing this wasn't part of the conference tournament.
Like a few of the things that could have been considered good, like Quante Berry and Curtis Givens, two guys that could come back, two guys that you could build, like, and actually have repeat guys. Like, they're starting to play a little bit better. Bradshaw, if Bradshaw will give you 21-5 the rest of the way, I can tell you this will be one of the two best teams in the American. But I do also understand, like, there's somewhat of a lowering of the bar here. And I'm not saying that I'm lowering the bar. I'm explaining to you how I'm watching the games.
It's your expectations. It's realistic expectations. So you're watching the game based off of, you know, what the Tigers need to do.
Correct.
There's nothing they can do beyond winning that conference tournament.
Exactly.
They've got to win.
They have one path.
They're not in. There's no bubble. They're not close to the
right. Their only path is they have to win the conference tournament. The best way to do that, get one of the top two seeds. You'll only have to play on Saturday. You'll only have to play on Sunday, and then you're in. I am not trying to spin that this team is as good as any of the other previous teams we're talking about. I'm simply viewing it through the objective of the year, which to me is win the conference tournament.
Right. That's the goal this year.
But yes, it is. Also, FAU's got this like European soccer thing going where like they're waving the flags in the fan, like in like the
really?
The camera will be looking
oh,
down,
cool.
And you'll see like flags waving the whole time. That was new for me.
They do that every game, not just for Memphis?
I don't know. I can safely say the first FAU game I've watched this basketball season was yesterday.
I know you're a sicko with the gambling and everything. I didn't know how far it goes.
This has been one of the lighter college basketball loads.
It's still football still happens. Yeah, football's still going.
But normally I can juggle. This was one of the lighter ones. So the Tigers take their first loss in conference play. Temple 3-0, so that you have a chance to give them their first loss when they show up at FedEx Forum. Currently, right now, Temple and Tulane 3-0 in league play. FAU and Charlotte are 3-1. South Florida, Memphis are 2-1 apiece, and Wichita State, UAB are 2-2. Brooks Koepka. All right, so the only reason why I bring this up, not because I know everybody's just absolutely hankering for some PGA Tour news, this is actually somewhat seismic in terms of if guys want to live and come back to the PGA Tour, this could be a part of it. The PGA Tour's board of directors, five-time major champion Brooks Koepka is returning to the PGA Tour as part of a new returning member program, which would also allow three other of LIV Golf's top stars to come back if they want. In a memo sent to the PGA Tour members on Monday, a copy of which was obtained by ESPN, the tour said Koepka is expected to make his return in the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines in La Jolla, California on January the 29th. He's also expected to play in the Waste Management Phoenix Open at TPC Scottsdale the following week. The returning member program allows LIV golfers who have been away from the PGA Tour for at least two seasons and who have won the Players Championship or one of the four major championships, Masters, PGA, US Open, and the Open Championship since 2022, to return to the PGA Tour under certain conditions with severe financial penalties. The other three eligible players would be Bryson DeChambeau, John Rahm, and Cameron Smith. I would be surprised if Bryson does it. I think Bryson's actually figured out a way to make... I think Bryson's one of the few guys that LIV has worked for because he's been able to kind of like rehabilitate his image and persona on his own terms with YouTube golf, like away from it. But he doesn't really take the LIV experience all that seriously. Like, he's just kind of playing it. Rahm and Cam Smith, I could see being guys that would be interested.
What does this mean for the future of PGA and
so
and LIV?
The other thing is they basically only have a month to do it. They basically opened a transfer portal window. And they have a window of essentially...
And if nobody else does it, do you think it gets reactivated at next year or another time with different stipulations?
I'm almost getting the sense of the way that it reads feels like it was a compromise. And basically it was an announcement. Hey, if you guys want to come back, here's your shot.
Yeah, we're opening the door for a minute.
Now, it is not without financial penalty. As part of Koepka's conditions to return, he agreed to forfeit any player equity shares for the next 5 years and will not be eligible for the $100 million FedEx Cup bonus program in 2026. The reason why I wonder that, it says bonus program.
Right.
Could he still compete in the FedEx Cup? Because, you know, they still give out, while they're all playing for the bonus prize, it's still tournaments that have payouts. And Brooks has been one of the guys that's been pretty good to Memphis. Brooks has been one of the guys, he's quietly is a huge supporter of St. Jude, but he has consistently played in the tournament. So I would like to know if Brooks, if he were eligible, could he still be able to come back? According to the statement, Rolap, the new head of the PGA Tour, forfeiting 5 years of potential equity in our player equity program represents one of the largest financial repercussions in professional sports history. Our estimations are that Brooks could miss out on approximately $50 to $85 million in potential earnings, depending on his competitive performance and the growth of the tour. Koepka said in his statement that he understands the financial penalties associated with his decision and that he would accept those. So, my interpretation of it is, all right, everyone's kind of acknowledged some of these guys we got to get back. Here's a shot. Are they willing to give up the money? Like, Brooks was also in an interesting position because Brooks was at the last year of his contract. So all the money that, like, Brooks is basically going to forfeit probably $40 million from LIV this year. And then potentially, like, some
would
of this.
Would you do it? Or is the PGA still kind of thinking a little too much about how they are thinking too much about themselves to think like this is a lot of financial penalties. Like, if you want these guys back, are you really opening the door?
I think it depends on what you play for. If I'm Dustin Johnson, no.
Yeah.
Because Dustin just plays for money. If I'm Brooks and if I'm Rahm, I consider it because you can tell those are two guys that almost every single player, I think the only exception of guys that have risen their game since going to LIV in majors has been Bryson. But Bryson also had a pretty high ceiling prior to that. Almost every LIV guy that has gone to the majors has been statistically a worse player than their previous profile. So if I'm somebody that, like, Brooks defines himself based on majors.
Yeah.
I also don't think it's any shock now that Rory tied Brooks at five majors and also won the Grand Slam. I don't think it's any shock that Brooks has been looking for a way back. And this is not, like, he's been trying to get back on the tour for a while. All right, speaking of getting back into it, let's get back into the Ja Morant drama of the day. Let's talk about it with Chris Harrington next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Chris Harrington, of course, covers the Grizzlies and more for the Daily Memphian. Also, make sure you check out the Daily Memphian's Grizzlies podcast, him and Drew Hill giving you their thoughts. Download, like, subscribe, follow him on the Everything app, at Chris Harrington. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Flying Over Water by Jason Isbell from his fan favorite album, Southeastern. Going out to the Memphis Grizzlies. They've already made the trip, but yesterday they were flying over water on the way to Berlin.
All right, so they're flying over water. I guess we'll ask the first question. Do you think we'll ever see Ja Morant play for the Grizzlies again?
I have talked to multiple people. None of them know. And I've talked to multiple people, like, you know, NBA-ish people, not just, you know, randos, who believe that he's going to play in the Berlin and London games.
Okay.
And I talked to someone outside of Memphis who's NBA-connected over the weekend who said to me, what I'm hearing from everybody I talk to is that Ja Morant's going to play two more games for the Grizzlies and only two more games for the Grizzlies. It'll be in Berlin and London. But we'll see. I don't think people know, at least some of the people I've talked to, like, no. So we'll find out.
Is there a scenario in your mind where he does not get traded before the deadline?
There is. I wonder. So, I mean, when I wrote about this on Friday, and it was like, what a going out present, like, you know, for the Jeff Calkins show, by the way. Like,
yeah.
It happens, like, minutes after, like, the final show.
As is tradition.
And so I was headed to have lunch with a friend, and I was 2 minutes out, and the Shams thing dropped. I had to call my friend and say, I'll catch you later. I got to swerve off and go right. One of the things I pointed out is that the Grizzlies have sort of been down this road before, and it was not a Zach Kleiman-led front office. Zach Kleiman was the assistant GM. He was part of this process. When they decided to move on from Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, there was a very similar thing at a very similar time of the season. They put it out for Adrian Wojnarowski, and it basically said the same thing. The Grizzlies, for the first time, are exploring trade opportunities. The franchise stalwarts, Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, but aren't necessarily committed to trading them, you know, blah, blah, blah. And sure enough, it was a split decision. They found a deal they liked from Toronto for Marc Gasol. They made the trade. They didn't think the offers from Mike Conley were good enough, and they didn't trade him. Now, they traded him in the summer. I think it was inevitable. What I wonder is, could they really do that with Morant?
Because yeah, Conley that was going to be my follow-up.
Personality, right?
Yes, because that –
you imagine
– yeah.
Can you imagine that split decision going the other way? Like, how comfortable would it have been to not trade Marc Gasol after that, you know? And I think the job situation is way, way, way rougher than that, way rougher. So I just don't know if they have the stomach to not take whatever they can get and wait till the summer. Maybe they do. You know, this is a big deal for the franchise, and I do think it's generally better. To me, the summer would open up more options. You would have more time. One thing that will happen in the summer is that you'll know where the lottery shakes out. And so there are teams now that probably aren't going to include a pick because they don't know what's going to happen to the pick, or, you know, they may be more reluctant, and then you have the protections. But if you have teams that are like, just make up teams, Sacramento, they think they're going to get a top three pick. What if like things go poorly in there and now they're the seventh pick and they don't see a savior in the draft and they're more likely to take a chance on John Morant? Think about other teams like that. So there's a rationale for waiting till the summer. There's also a rationale for like, let's try to fix this deal. I think it's too far gone for that.
Yeah, because I think that was one of the other questions that I had, because rationally, I felt like the summer was always going to be the most appropriate time. I don't know if that's the right word, but it felt like you would have more information to make your decision.
Yep.
Why do you think it got sped up?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the one sentence like summation of this Grizzly season is going to be John Morant and Zach Edey played 4 minutes together.
Yeah,
you know that's what's going to end up happening. So, I mean, I feel like I've been writing about this. We've been talking about this for like a few weeks leading up to it, without knowing precisely that it was going to happen. Jeff, the last couple of days last week, was like really trying to tease, and hey, you know, I was sort of reluctant, even though it seemed very possible it was headed that way. I think there's so much here, and there's so much over multiple years that got us to this point. We don't have time to hash all that out. I'll say that I think the underneath all of this, as I've been writing to talk about, has been the contract situation. I think there were issues before that, but Morant was extension eligible last summer for the first time. I think he wanted an extension, and I wonder if he maybe expected an extension. The Grizzlies were not comfortable offering him that extension. And what I gather, and this is like context clues, and this is, you can hear what Zach Kleiman said, you know, in the middle of the summer, we said this is going to be a big year for John Morant. I think people interpreted that, myself included, as basically saying, you know, we've told Ja we're not comfortable doing an extension now based on how the last 2 years have gone. We want to see more from you this year. I think the team set it up as a show and prove. Go make us give you money. Like, we can't do this extension for you if you're not on the floor most of the time playing at an all-star, all-NBA level. That hasn't happened in 2 years. Go do that this season, and, like, we can talk about it again next summer. And rightly or wrongly, it doesn't seem like John Morant embraced that as a positive challenge. It seemed like he was still a bit out of shape about it. And I think that the sore feelings over that have carried on into the season, and that's sort of what has got us here.
So, Kevin and I were discussing at the beginning, and to your point, I feel like we could have done 3 hours on this radio show trying to fit a timeline and offer the proper context and it, yeah, whatnot. I also was, when he was asking me, he's like, how do we get here? I was almost just simplifying it to this, is in a huge part of this, it's just the number of games he's missed. And in the end, if you're going to cost that much money, you've got to play. And like you said, there are other factors that go into maybe the decision not to play is, well, I don't have an extension.
Is he not happy is why he's not playing?
Right, but it feels like to me for the Grizzlies side of this is part of the math is we're paying him a lot of money to be in street clothes.
Well, you have to remember, when we're talking about an extension, he's still got 2 years left after this one on the current contract for more than $80 million. So you're talking about adding, depending on when you would sign an extension, a year or 2 years on top of that, projecting out even further. And if you're the Grizzlies, and people could argue this point, right? Like, Ja's job might be the best player they've ever had. Certainly the most exciting, the most popular. Like, there's a lot of cost.
Biggest star. I know it's fair to say this. He's the biggest star they've ever had.
Yeah. But if you're the Grizzlies, you're not just thinking about, like, what is happening now, which has not been good in terms of availability and performance and other factors. You have to think about how confident you are that it's going to change, not just now or next year or the year after that, but the year after that and maybe the year after that, right? And now you're factoring in not only all of the stuff that's been happening, but you're wondering about how his game's going to age in terms of the, you know, the lack of progression on shooting, the durability issues. Is that going to get worse over time? There's a lot of that to it. And then I think, and Jeff alluded to this in what he wrote over the weekend, and it's a subject. You know, the column I wrote on Friday was not intended to be everything related to the subject. They have not traded him yet. It was intended just to be, this is a team decision, not a Morant decision. I don't think Morant demanded a trade. This is a team decision. Why did they make this decision? But if you look at it more holistically, I think there's a lot of blame on both sides in the big picture of how it went wrong, because I think the Grizzlies were so sort of cowed by having this young, exciting player, the star who wanted to be there and fit, and the whole shebang, just like the whole city was. But I think the Grizzlies probably let some stuff go that other organizations might have had a little bit more discipline on, and it got away from them. And then, like, they tried to clean it up. And then at that point, I mean, it feels like Ja's used to a certain thing, right? And then he's not getting what he used to get. And then you look up, and also, like, the entire coaching staff and basketball staff, for the most part, is switched over. He doesn't have people that he has old relationships with. And then they're telling him no. They're telling him no to a contract. Like, that's unimaginable 4 years ago, coming out of the 2021-22. It would have been whatever you want, sir. And then he's having a coach, like, reprimand him in the locker room in front of other players, which I think he probably wasn't used to. And so I think that that switch in how they've handled him, while maybe appropriate, was probably not prepared. The ground for that was probably not laid very well over time, honestly.
Well, that was kind of another question we considered, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. Do you think that suspension, was that a mistake, the way that it was handled?
Maybe, but I think underneath that, whatever specifically provoked that, and I think it was related to some of the minute stuff and playing time and the context of the game and all that, but I don't think that was really what it was about. I think that was a flashpoint that ignited some sore feelings that were already there on the bigger picture stuff, right? That was bigger than the coach. That was about the contract and some of the other stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
No, yeah, I mean, you can go ahead. The coach hire is the other thing. When I'm out around town doing trivia and bingo and stuff, it seems like a lot of the fans are going to feel like the Grizzlies are picking the coach over Ja if he gets traded. And I've been saying from the beginning that the feelings of, like, was this the right guy? Did they make a mistake by not doing a true coaching search and trying to find somebody NBA experience to lead the team with Ja Morant?
Yeah, maybe. But, like, this is I mean, there were issues with the coaching staff last year and Ja, right?
Well, that
I don't think they're choosing the coach over Ja. I think they're making a decision about Ja. That's sort of independent of the coach, and it's about, again, just how comfortable are you making this long-term commitment financially, given all of the issues that you've had the last couple years and the fact that that stuff hasn't really been changing, you know?
But was it a mistake to hire a coach with no NBA coaching experience to handle this situation? It was a fragile situation before the season started. We know how important it was.
It might be, but I don't think that alone, like, fixes everything, even if so.
Right.
You know, I think that deflects the bigger issues onto – I think there's a separate evaluation of Isolo that is warranted, but I think deflecting all the Ja stuff onto him, I don't think is fair.
Do you think, even if we would have seen – like, let's say he played a similar amount of games, but in the games that he played, he would be playing better? Do you think we'd still be in this position?
Well, it's not just about the better. It's about – you know, it's about embracing the situation, embracing the idea that, like, you know, we'll revisit your situation at the end of the season. And then it's about the Grizzlies, too. It's about them asking themselves, like, do we think we can get comfortable with an extension? Maybe under any circumstances. It's quite possible that, like, even if he were playing well, they would say, projecting out 3-4 years, do we really want to do this? I mean, that's possible, too. I don't know the answer to that. But I just think when you've had the situation you've had for the last 2 years and you're going into this season and it's set up as a, okay, show us something, change our minds because we can't get to a yes on this long-term commitment, and then it's gone the way it's gone, that's sort of where you find yourself. I certainly think it would be best for both parties involved to stick it out until the summer, and not only stick it out, but to embrace the trying to make it work. Like, I'd endorse that even today. I would endorse that. But I just don't – like, it doesn't matter what I want. It matters, like, what's actually happening. It doesn't just seem to be happening.
Yeah, because I'm with you, but then I always stumble on this next question. Well, how would you do that?
Well, that's the thing. Is it even conceivable that you could get not just beyond this season, but could you get through another season without having an extension on the table and him still be okay with that? Or could you get him to agree to an extension that's lower than a max? I don't know the answer to that, But if the answer is no, like it's quite possible the Grizzlies are just at a point. Honestly, the rest of the league, most of the league, I think, would be at this point looking from the outside, where they just look at it and say, you know, take the Ja Morant name off of it and just look at the player type and the skill set and the age and the way you project that out over time. I think most teams in the league probably wouldn't want to do that kind of extension.
Right, and that makes them harder to trade. If you do trade, it's going to be it's not the best situation. So before we let you go, we're concerned about the kids of the Memphis area. And how are we supposed to tell the kids?
We've noticed, Chris, that this is going to be maybe it's because of our age and we've got all our friends have kids. The thing that we have noticed is that a lot of dads and moms are going to have to tell their kids that they're trading Ja Morant, and then their kids are going to ask why. And the answer that the parents are going to give, because it feels like a lot of parents have kind of made peace with, all right, this is where this is headed, maybe for the best, you know, however.
This is going to impact our children.
But the kids are not going to really accept that answer. You got any suggestions?
The next gen of Grizz fans. How do we talk to them? How do we break the news?
We're not going to do a collective bargaining agreement second April.
No, it's going to be
for the children of Memphis.
I thought about making a PowerPoint, but the graphics weren't great.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like piling on, and that is not my intent. But the reality is, like, the kids of Memphis haven't been watching Ja Morant play basketball much for the last 2.5 years.
I think that's why.
But they still like him, right? They still want him to be, like, part of Memphis, I feel like.
Fans are not a monolith, and I think there's a lot of disagreement within the fan base.
Sure, yeah.
I think there are fans who are exhausted and ready to move on. I think there are fans who will be livid when this happens, especially when they see the return. And I think both of those feelings are extremely valid. And the one thing that unites both parts of the fan base in that regard is that no one wanted it to get to this. Like, nobody wanted it to get to this at all. But the reality is, this is what it's been for, like, now we're in the third season of it for various reasons. When the one game suspension happened back in Halloween night, or suspension the next day, I was talking to somebody I know here in Memphis who's like a fan, but not a hardcore fan, like a casual fan, but people who like buy tickets, right? And the woman I was talking to said, you know what? I went to 5 Grizzlies games last year, and Ja Morant played one of them and just kind of shrugged. And that person doesn't speak to the fan base any more than anyone else does, but that's a pretty big portion of it.
No, it's almost like the right answer of how you talk to your kids is kind of depressing, which is like, listen, you're going to have a lifetime of liking players, liking players, and it's going to end horribly. It's going to end in disappointment. Like, this is just, you're learning at an early point. Like, this is a life lesson.
It comes with the territory, right? You can do an NBA history lesson and do the, like, other things that look good early on and then short-circuited. Like, last week or the week before, we talked about the Stephon Marbury, Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
I was in college when that happened. That was going to be
forever.
The dawn of the golden age. And then, like, a year and a half or 2 years into it, like, Stephon Marbury knocks some flips on their door and says, trade me. You know, I mean, sometimes things don't work out.
Chris, we really appreciate you joining us. We know you're traveling. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
That is Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. Again, the Daily Memphian Grizzlies podcast with Chris and Drew, available wherever you get your podcasts. All right.
We're going to get the listeners' thoughts, your thoughts. Tuning in right
Correct.
Now a little bit later. We're just a few minutes away from that.
We're going to do one more segment. Let's do an overreaction. We haven't even got to talk NFL playoffs. Let's do an overreaction on the NFL playoffs. And then starting hour number two, we're going to hear from you. That's how it's going to work out. So we'll come back. We'll do a quick segment on the NFL before we talk to you. Stick around. You're listening to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to hear from you. We want to know what you're thinking about everything that is going on with Ja Morant. We will be taking your phone calls at the top of the hour. But before we specifically get into some of the NFL games, because we'll probably basically make our TV timeout watching football on TV.
Well, do you want to save that and talk about the college football playoffs?
Well, what I was going to say is this was going to be my overreaction, because we discussed if this was possible. Mm-hmm. I think moving forward, this past weekend could be the weekend of football that we look the most forward to. Because I do think the NFL is heading into as much of an era of parity as we've seen. I think that what we used to have to deal with on Super Wild Card Weekend presented by Verizon Wireless, thanks to the commish. A lot of blowouts. Well,
It was not a fun weekend. It was a fun week.
We saw the biggest blowout be on Friday night.
Yes.
With Indiana and Oregon.
But maybe beyond, a future coach in the NFL, you never know.
But last year in the two semifinal games, beg your pardon, because that will be the weekend. It'll be Thursday semifinal, Friday semifinal in college, then two wild card games on Saturday, three wild card games on Sunday. Are y'all with me? I'd rather have three wild card games on Saturday, three wild card games on Sunday. I don't like the Monday night game.
Yeah, very territorial move.
Agree. 100% like, agree there.
And this is kind of the same problem that I had last year when we actually got, and we'll coming up the next week, which was we had divisional weekend in the NFL, and like that was a very good divisional weekend, but it was kind of like when you got to Monday, you were like, all right, I just kind of need a night off. And then we had the national championship game, which will be the same setup. Obviously, the playoff format is very much in the air, so will it continue on the same calendar? I have no idea. But in the event that the calendar kind of stays similarly, where we get semifinal college semifinal on Thursday, college semifinal on Friday, wild card weekend, but, I think this weekend's going to be awesome.
And that does make Monday part of it. Like, it's a stretch, right? At least it makes it last longer, your weekend. But, yeah, it's as far as football, there's not a better, which puts it in contention for one of the best sports weekends of the entire year. Like, the best time. Like, if you could put that, if we have that Thursday, Friday college football semis and then follow it up with wild card weekend, because wild card weekend, I mean, it delivered. You've got the teams that, you know, or obviously more evenly matched than any other teams that you're going to see go up against each other. And, man, so many close games. We'll talk about those later. We'll talk about those. What do you think about Indiana? Because I know we're going to talk mostly NFL when we get there later. But the Indiana blowout on Friday night, did you see that coming?
Did I see 56-22? Is that the final, right? I'm trying to do it from
you
memory.
You just see 56. I mean, my gosh.
My wife went to bed. She got up on Sunday. She's like, what was the final? I was like, 56-22. I told George part of the reason, because George, didn't you rank it as your game of the weekend?
I did.
And this was not like, no. How could you?
I was going to come in and say, hand up, my bad, that was an ass kicking.
The reason why I had it low was because I did not really know in my heart of hearts how Oregon was going to keep it close.
Yeah, 56-22.
Because I'm sitting there watching, and we saw this game in Altson, and Indiana wins by 10. And I think Indiana has gotten better since that point, and I think Oregon has gotten more injured since that point. They got some guys back, but really I was like, they kind of become like a grinded out type team, and I was like, man, that's not really how you're going to beat Indiana. Like, you have to like force the issue on Indiana. I think with Indiana, we're now at the point, we're one game away from saying like, is this the best team ever?
Yeah, I mean, best team. I mean, they have beaten everybody and not even been close. It's obvious when you watch the games that they're the better team. And
this would be my point.
So you're picking them. You're picking the win. I mean, I don't know anybody. Well, I haven't talked to anybody anywhere ever that's right now that's picking against Indiana at this point. But
part of the issue with Miami, and I would state this for all the Hurricane fans out there.
Yeah.
Miami's not lost a game by more than 7 points since November the 1st of 2023.
That's coming up, though.
Like 32 games.
You're saying it's happening.
If you told me
a week from today,
I need to see Miami's injury report. Because Miami's injury report, if it comes up positively, they do present enough of a challenge where they're going to be able to probably run the football a little bit, play a little bit of keep away, and then their defensive front could present some challenges for Indiana where Indiana can't just do everything they want offensively. It feels like sometimes on offense, Indiana goes, I guess we'll run it this drive, and then they just run it down their throat. Like, well, we haven't thrown it in a while. Like, let's
do that.
Let's dial up those. And so, like, they just kind of, it's a dealer's choice.
It's like
choice.
You're playing a video game, and you're just trying to mix things up. But that, what we get. All right, so we've got Indiana versus Miami. Does the Miami making it all the way, has that changed your opinion about anything to do with the seeding and the number of teams and all of that?
No, the only thing it made me realize was I wasn't wrong on Miami. I was just early. Because, like, the same thing, like, we kind of thought as we got to October, it's like Miami passed the eye test. And I remember thinking, like, this is one of the best teams. And then you fall into the inevitable. They're going to lose a game they have no business losing. See Louisville. Then they're going to lose another game that was horribly mismanaged. A crystal ball special. See SMU. Mm-hmm. And you thought that was going to keep them out of the playoff. Well, no. And then they got to the playoff, and the roster was able to actually achieve what it was capable of doing. But I don't know. I mean, this is kind of the weird thing about Indiana, where do they maybe have as many first-round draft picks as the next closest team? Maybe not, but if you told me, George, that they wind up with, I don't know, 15 guys that get drafted, but a ton of them are going to be day three guys?
That's about right.
That makes sense?
I mean, they are going to have likely the number one overall pick. Mendoza has been special in these playoff games. And then
I don't know if he's missed a throw, really.
I mean, what did he do against Oregon? Just
I think he was 17 of 20.
Yeah, 17 of 20 for a 177 and 5 scores.
Yeah, and it was like almost every throw was just
on the money, dialed up perfectly, great touch on them. Do we know what's going to happen with Elijah Surratt?
I don't know. Also,
that dude is awesome.
Surratt, and then the Father Ryan receiver,
Charlie Becker,
he got banged up too.
Is Becker there? Oh, he is an actual receiver.
Yeah, no, Becker's actually had a great second half of the season.
Oh, he's been phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, that's my whole thing, and like one of the big points that this game very well also could come down to. We saw it a little bit against Ole Miss, and we saw it kind of sneak in a little bit in some of these other games where Miami's had struggles. They can get a little undisciplined at times. We don't see that with Indiana.
Indiana's like a model of efficiency.
Yes.
They just do whatever they're supposed to on offense, whatever look you give them, they execute. And then on defense, it feels like they never miss tackles. They're always in the right spot. Like, like they got gashed on one or two runs, but that was like a cutback run. But do you ever see like somebody's receiver just running free through the secondary, like a college football special where just the coverage is blown, somebody's running wide open? Like you never see it with
their gap discipline is sublime. And so good.
They were like second in the nation in fewest missed tackles. Like they just do everything right. I do think the big lesson.
They might be the Tim Duncan of this year. Really.
No, they could be the big fundamental. I do feel better about the theory we were kicking around. I do think what we're seeing in college football is get old, stay old.